That first morning in New York City, we learned about each other's lives for hours. Some of the children had risked their lives to attend the conference. Others had walked hundreds of miles to neighboring countries to be able to get on a plane. Within minutes of talking to each other, we knew that the room was filled with young people who had had a very difficult childhood, and some were going to return to these lives at the end of the conference. After the introductions, we sat in a circle so that the different facilitators could tell us about themselves. Most of the facilitators worked for NGOs, but there was a short white woman with long dark hair and bright eyes who said, "I am a storyteller." I was surprised at this and gave her all my attention. She used elaborate gestures and spoke very clearly, enunciating every word. She said her name was Laura Sims. She introduced her co-facilitator, Teresa Blair, who was light-skinned, had African features, and held a drum. Before Laura finished talking, I had already decided that I would take her workshop. She said she would teach us how to tell our stories in a more compelling way. I was curious to find out how this white woman, born in New York City, had become a storyteller. That same morning, Laura kept looking at Ba and me. I didn't know that she had noticed. We were wearing only our light African shirts and pants and sat closer to the radiators, our hands wrapped around our tiny bodies, and every now and then shaking from the cold that seemed to have settled in our bones. In the afternoon before lunch, she approached us. "Do you have winter jackets?" she asked. We shook our heads. A painful concern passed over her face, making her smile look forced. That evening, she returned with winter jackets, hats, and gloves for us. I felt I was wearing a heavy green costume that made my body bigger than it looked. But I was happy, because now I could venture outside to see the city after the daily workshops. Years later, when Laura offered me one of her winter jackets, I refused to accept it because it was a woman's jacket. She joked with me about the fact that when she had first met me, I was so cold that I didn't care that I was wearing a woman's winter jacket. Ba and I became a little close with Laura and Teresa over the course of the conference. Sometimes Laura would talk to us about stories I had heard as a child. I was in awe of the fact that a white woman from across the Atlantic Ocean, who had never been to my country, knew stories so specific to my tribe and upbringing. When she became my mother years later, she and I would always talk about whether it was destined or coincidental that I came from a very storytelling-oriented culture to live with a mother in New York who is a storyteller. I called my uncle in Freetown during my second day. Aminata answered the phone. "Hi, this is Ishmael. Could I please speak to uncle?" I asked. "I will go get him. Call back in 2 minutes." Aminata hung up the phone. When I called back, my uncle picked up the phone. "I am in New York City," I told him. "Well," he said, "I guess I believe you because I haven't seen you in a few days." He giggled. I opened the hotel window to let him hear the sounds of New York. "That doesn't sound like Freetown," he said, and was silent for a bit before he continued. "So what is it like?" "It is excruciatingly cold," I said, and he began to laugh. "Ah, maybe it is your initiation to the white people's world. Well, tell me all about it when you return. Stay inside if you have to." As he spoke, I pictured the dusty gravel road by his house. I could smell my aunt's granite soup. Every morning, we would quickly walk through the snow to a conference room down the street. There we would cast our sufferings aside and intelligently discuss solutions to the problems facing children in our various countries. At the end of these long discussions, our faces and eyes glittered with hope and the promise of happiness. It seemed we were transforming our suffering as we talked about ways to solve their causes and let them be known to the world. On the night of the second day, Madoka from Malawi and I walked west along 47th Street without realizing that we were heading straight into the heart of Times Square. We were busy looking at the buildings when we suddenly saw lights all over the place and shows playing on huge screens. We looked at each other in awe of how absolutely amazing and crowded the place was. One of the screens had a woman and a man in their underwear. I guess they were showing it off. Madoka pointed at the screen and laughed. Others had music videos or numbers going across. Everything flashed and changed very quickly. We stood at the corner for a while, mesmerized by the displays. After we were able to tear our eyes away from them, we walked up and down Broadway for hours, staring at the store windows. I didn't feel cold as the number of people, the glittering buildings, and the sounds of cars overwhelmed and intrigued me. I thought I was dreaming. When we returned to the hotel later that night, we told the other children about what we had seen. After that, we all went out to Times Square every evening.